Weight loss solutions are not one-size-fits-all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
You are in for an absolute treat, as there is so much backstory to Ukitake here that has never been made into the manga that is in this episode. Welcome back to Bleach Boys, episode 29 for Thousand Year Blood War. You've seen it. Yes, I've seen it. Pythes hasn't seen it. Now, we are one of 100 that have seen it. The only 100 until, I believe, next weekend for New York Comic Con, when they're going to get to see it. But we have already seen it. It is an exclusive premiere for the Bleach Thousand Year Blower Fireside Chat. We got to go to Hollywood just this morning, and we got to see the voice actors of Ichigo and Uryu in person, Marita and Sugiyama themselves, respectively, retroactively, whatever that word is. And we also got to watch episode 1, episode 2, and episode 3 from Bleach Thousand Year Blower Part 3, the first in the world to see it. 100%. If I didn't put that home enough for you guys. So we're going to talk about it. It is going to be a full spoiler cast. First, we'll give us some initial impressions, and then we're going to go fully into what exactly happened in the episodes, what new scenes you can expect, where it ended, and what we think about it going forward, huh? Now, it is worth noting, if you guys want a quick non-spoiler summary, the first half of the episode is all Ukitake. All Ukitake.
Mm-hmm. Is this new?
Very new.
So the second half of it is Orihime, which we have referenced this scene, Orihime attempting to heal the Soul King.
Yep.
And then a little bit more of the lab scenes with Urahara. And then it is all Aizen. And that is the whole episode. So it is a great episode. Now, it is not action heavy at all. There is a split second of action in here. You don't get much more than that. That being said, it is a very lore heavy, very dialogue heavy, which is to be expected and something that we've talked about before the season even started. We were looking forward to those parts the most.
Yep.
This is more of that. This is all dialogue. It's all character interaction. There are characters that we have previously talked about. Where are they? They show up here. So let's dive in. Jose, what did you think of the episode as spoiler-free as possible?
Ooh, spoiler-free. I loved it. Again, we talked about information and how much we wanted it. Yep. We got plenty of that in this episode.
It is worth noting, I think, similar to the second episode that we watched, episode 28, they don't mess around. They hop right into what they're doing. You know, if you've read the manga, you would know that the place that they ended is a little bit strange, because it immediately keeps going. The anime is the same way. The anime is just like, and we are back. Here you go. Now, when we watch it, they did not show us the opening and the endings, which I think made it also feel like, oh my God, like they're just going full steam. They're just not stopping. Yes. It was very cool. Not only did we get to watch the episode, but we also got Q&A with the two voice actors, and we did learn quite a few behind the scenes information about how they've been doing Bleach Thousand Year Blood War and their favorite scenes. We've learned stuff about Kubo and what he's contributed to the anime. There's a lot of cool stuff to talk about when it comes to this, but let's hop in to our full spoiler episode. Pythes is here with us. He's going to be our fact checker for the manga, because I believe a lot of this stuff is new to the anime.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know when to stop reading, so I am now frantically flipping through trying to find the part you're talking about where she tries to heal the Soul King.
Well, let me go ahead and kick you off to where the episode immediately starts. The episode straight up starts with a flashback to Ukitake's parents in the shrine of Mimihagi, begging for Mimihagi to save Ukitake. As a kid, Ukitake is laying on the ground, foaming at the mouth, saying,
3-year-old,
like, and they're like, please, like, and they're doing the chant, Mimihagi, Mimihagi, please lend your power, like, take my son's organs and his sickness away, Mimihagi, Mimihagi. That's not word for word. I only got one viewing of it. Okay, but that's what they're chanting over and over and over again. And finally, you know, he begins to foam at the mouth, and the mom begins to cry. And that's when we see a single tear come from the statue, which we have right behind us. The arm, a statue, a tear comes down, and it starts to flow towards the kid Ukitake. And that's when we see the shadow envelop Ukitake, and then we go into this other world, which is very similar to the world that we saw Yuha in. A world of stillness, a world of calmness. It's like a nice little water ground, and Ukitake, the kid, walks up into this, you know, it's more of a humanoid form, but it's still the hand for a head, walks up and wipes the tear off of his eye, and it forms into a puddle in his hand. And then we see kid Ukitake begin to bloat up like he's going to explode from this water entering him. And it starts to slowly, like, he turns black, and then it flows out of him back the other side. And we begin to see he kind of takes a couple steps back, and he is in the form of Mimiha. You see him as a black form, and that's when it actually flows out of him from the back. First of all, that's the flashback that we see with the parents and all that. Now, there is a lot of flashbacks here. It's almost all flashbacks happening right here. Pythes, was that in the manga?
In the manga, it just shows, like, the outside of the shrine. Then Ukitake foaming at the mouth. Then you see the statue. And then it is just Ukitake going, like, oh, yeah, I was supposed to die when I was 3. And then you kind of just see a black shadow of the hand, and that's it.
Is that all the flashbacks that you get from Ukitake?
When I say flashback, I mean, that's one page. And this is beginning of chapter page. So the top of it is all black with just the words Mimihage, chapter 616. Mm-hmm. Then it's the top part of the next page is a flashback. And then a single panel on the next page is the shadow of Mimihage. And then a single panel on the next is the statue of the hand. So altogether, it's about a page and a half.
Okay, well, you are in for an absolute treat, as there is so much backstory to Ukitake here that has never been made into the manga that is in this episode.
It's wild.
So immediately following this, we see Ukitake as a kid, and it's just kind of showing him walking around his district that he was raised in, and we see this big guy starting to pick on a old woman. And he goes up to the guy like, hey, like, don't hit that woman, you know, and then the woman hits the guy and walks off. And he's like, no, I was trying to save you from the old lady. She hit him with
like a 1-2-3 combo.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, she has a reputation around here. And he's like, you know, you should come join me in the Soul Reaper Academy. Come join me. And he's like, fuck no, I'm not going to join you in the Soul Reaper Academy. And that's when we cut forward to Ukitake being in the Soul Reaper Academy. And he is sparring a certain young Kyuraku. Is he was sparring. And who is he sparring Kyuraku in front of? But a young Sasakibe, a young Retsu, and a young Yama, yep, all watching them spar. And Retsu
had black hair.
Yep. And Retsu's commenting on, like, wow, they have like a lot of potential, a lot of spirit. And Sasakibe is the one that is conducting the duel. Like, he is the person in the middle. And Yamamoto's like, yeah, like they're good. You know, and this is Yama, like Jose mentioned, with the black hair. This is a young thousand-year blood war version of Yama. And this is when they first introduce themselves to each other. This is their first, they have been in classes before, and this is the first time they have formally introduced themselves to each other after this duel. They're like, hey, like, I'm, you know, Kyuraku Junsui. And he's like, oh, I'm Ukitake Jushiro. And they're like, oh. And it's like, I've seen you in my classes before. And that's where we find out Ukitake's like, hey, I want to ask you something. And then they start walking down this hallway, and Ukitake and Kyuraku's laughing. He's like, I've been asked and introduced people to women before, but never been asked for where I get my sweets. He's like, yep. Oh, that's why you've always been staring at me in class. And Ukitake's like, dude, they look so good. The sweets look so good. So they're walking back from the sweet shop, and they're eating it. And Shunsui and Ukitake's like, man, these are really good. And she's like, well, that's because there's alcohol in them. And Ukitake says, freaking out. I was like, wait a second, there's alcohol? Like, you can't have it. And then they open the doors, and we see Ukitake's siblings, where he has like 4 or 5 of them.
He's got a lot. Yeah.
And the siblings immediately take the alcohol chocolates from Ukitake. And that's why he found out it's a problem, because they have alcohol in them, and his kids are going to be, or the siblings are going to be eating them. We're all super underage. And Ukitake then, after this, you know, they obviously, of course, become friends. And it leads to Ukitake taking Kyuraku to the Mimihage Shrine. And he's like, hey, like, I want to tell you something. I want to show you. And Kyuraku almost immediately reveals that he actually already had heard of Mimihage. Mm-hmm. He knows of this rumor and how does the deity of this district that Ukitake is from. And Ukitake is kind of trying to tell him, like, well, it's real. You know, like, when I was a kid, I was sick. And Kyuraku is like, I already know. Like, I already knew. He's like, I did. He's like,
already investigated.
Yeah, he's like, I did some digging, and I looked into it, and I've heard the stories. And Ukitake says, oh, and then you met me, and you believed it. He's like, yeah, I saw your condition and how it was neither getting worse or better, and I immediately knew it to be truthful. And then they just kind of laughed, and they're like, cool. And then Ukitake's like, okay, awesome. So I guess you're not going to try to convince me to not you know, join the 13 court guards. He's like, no. He's like, I'm just not going to let you die that easily.
Yep.
So then that's when they become besties, of course.
But I like that those scenes leading up to it was them walking through what is like Mimihage's shrine. And then it's like all of the seasons are going through it. And it's really sweet.
Yeah. And we cut now to Ukitake and Hiraka both being captains. And this is after Kaien's death is where we're at now. Which we speak about previously. Kaien is the goddamn ace of this series who just keeps popping up. And they're talking about the, you know, the kind of... Ukitake is sad that Kaien died, and he's reflecting on the fact that his illness is also part of the problem that why he died. And we cut over to Ukitake being interviewed by Central 46, and Central 46 is giving him a hard time. Like, one, you need to choose a lieutenant, and he's like, I don't want to choose another lieutenant. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want one. I do not want another lieutenant. And they're like, you are a captain. You need to have a lieutenant, and especially because we heard that your sickness potentially played a role in why your lieutenant died. And Ukitake's like, no, like, you guys said, Central 46, that it is up to the captain to choose which lieutenant he wants, and I do not want one. And they're like, your sickness is all the more reason why you should have a lieutenant. And he stands up. He's like, no, I'm not going to do it. And that's the explanation in the universe as to why he waited so long for Rukia. And Rukia was the lieutenant, eventually the captain. And that's the scene that we get here, anime only as well. Now, we're not fucking done with anime only Ukitake scenes, because now we jump forward more to after Yama's death now.
Yes.
And it's the three OGs in the, I don't know what do they call this? Like the captain's meeting hall. Is that the first division hall where they always hold the captain's meetings?
I think that takes place in like the squad one barracks is where they always have the big meetings, but I'm not sure.
So let's just say that's it. They're in the squad one barracks where they have their captain's meetings, and they are all, it is Retsu, it is Ukitake, and it is Kiraku. And they're all standing around a table looking at Yama's broken sword. And they're like, and Kiraku's like, man, Yama, like, why did you have to leave right now? Like, this is so messed up. And Kiraku kind of knows. He's like, had he still been here, I would have never have known, you know, how hard it is to be the one giving commands. Like, he's like, this sucks. And this is obviously probably one of the last times that they saw Retsu. And this is what this is kind of alluding to, because he's like, it's not good to have to give these commands out. Like, I hate it. And Kiraku then looks towards Retsu and Ukitake and is like, hey, I would like a moment alone. Like, just with, you know, Yama's sword, like, in the, you know, squad one barracks. And this is where we get a scene of just Ukitake and Retsu. How often have you seen these two, like, interact, like, face to face? And this scene was so good. This is probably my favorite scene from this whole episode. And note, there's Aizen moments in here. This is my favorite scene because Ukitake and Retsu basically say goodbye to each other. They both know what is happening. And they're both kind of like, yeah, this sucks, huh? And Retsu is like, well, you know, got to do what you got to do. And you see Retsu go mean mode. You see the face change on Retsu. And Retsu's like, well, goodbye. And Ukitake's like, I'll see you soon.
Yeah. I'll see you soon. I'm like, wow.
Yes. So crazy.
I think in that moment, Retsu Unohana died.
Yep.
Because you don't see her with the kind face anymore. After that, it's her walking into the chamber after Shunsui gives the order. And then after that, it's, you know, she leaves a letter for Isane, but you don't see her write it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's the fight with Kenpachi.
So we cut to the lab after that scene. This is all of the backstory and the flashbacks that we get. And we cut back to the lab. And at this point, Ukitake, by the way, I believe at the beginning of the episode, in between the flashbacks, he's already taken his place in the middle of the lab. And he's like, hey, I have to do this. He takes off his cloak. We see the back hand of Mimihage on him. And it starts to kind of convulse. And Ukitake begins coughing up blood, but a lot of blood, like much more than he normally coughs up. And we see him start to be developed in this blackness that reaches up into the sky. And so we cut back to Rukia now seeing this happen, and like he is like fully taken over by this black thing that's going to the sky, and he can still talk, and Rukia's like, captain, like, please, like, captain, like, don't do this, you know. And only Rukia is the one that's speaking up here. Even his two little, like, I don't know what you call them, two little buddies, the guys that are always following him around, they're not really saying anything. They're just kind of like looking away. They're like, this is like too hard to watch. And Rukia's like, but what's gonna happen with squad 13? Like, you can't do this. And that's where Ukitake kind of like acknowledging, he's like, I apologize to you, Rukia, for always making it so tough for you.
Yeah.
And kind of like gently nudges, like, it's you, Rukia. Like, you're going to take squad 13. Like, I'm sorry. And that is when we jump straight back to Yuha, and we go immediately. The whole gang is jumping Yuha at this point. Ichigo dashes at him again. Orihime, they're all going to make a dash. So Yoruichi is the one that comes to the plan. He's like, hey, I'll distract. Orihime, you need to go heal the Soul King. And this is where we get Ganju. Ganju does something in this scene. Ganju comes forward. He looks like he's going to attack Yuha. You're like, oh my God, Ganju's going to do something? No, he does a sand thing on the ground to make a smoke screen. That is Ganju's contribution to this fight. Makes a smoke screen. That allows for from there, it goes straight to Chad running through the smoke screen. Devil arm punches Yuha. He just catches it, of course. Yoruichi comes in. Also just catches it. So he has both of them holding there. We see Orihime attempt to heal the Soul King. And it just doesn't work. Like it starts to piece it back together. And then it just shatters and goes back. And Yuha's like, that won't work. Like a merely human doesn't have the power to heal the Soul King. It's not going to happen. And then we see Mimihagi begin to reach up through the ground and start to kind of piece together the Soul King like we see in the manga. And this is where we get Yuha visibly mad. Like you see it in his eye. And he's like, why did I not see this?
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I could not see this coming. Why did my eyes not see? Like, he's mad. Like, why did my eyes not see this? And even Yoruichi notes, like, from the way Yuha's reacting, that he couldn't see it.
He didn't see
it. Like, Yoruichi notices it. And so Ukitake is still talking as Mimihagi's going up. And he quotes Ruki. Ruki, like, doesn't want this to happen. Ruki's like, there's got to be another way.
She cares for her captain.
Like, you can't do it. And Ukitake here quotes back the classic Kaien line, dude. The classic Kaien line right here comes out. And he says, Rukia, remember, there are two types of battles. And then it goes ... And then we cut to Kyoraku in the Mukin. And Kyoraku is the one that finishes the quote. Like, one to protect people, one to protect your honor. And he's like, don't go too wild out there, Ukitake. And that's pretty much the last of the Ukitake scenes that we get that episode. So Pythes, manga reference, how much of that, what's the order, how did that look in the manga?
Okay, so I'm just going to go to like the Orihime trying to heal the Soul King. I'm just going to say it's this one page. She shoots out her hairpins. They move in front of the Soul King rock, immediately shatter. And then Yuha just like, ha, you can't do that. And that is literally it.
Interesting. So we get more of an explanation in the anime where it does actually begin to work. But then Yuha states that a human does not have the power to put back together the Soul King, basically.
Okay, so for Ukitake's sacrifice, after, you know, it doesn't work and the realm starts shaking, you know, the ink, the weird, like, black stuff comes off of the bag. And he just says, yeah, I'll take Soul King's place. You don't worry. I'm sure someone will explain it later. He takes his shirt off. You see it all happening. He explains what's going on. That's when you get the flashback to him as a kid that takes place over a chapter. And then he's like, have you ever heard of the Mimihage? And then Kisuke gives a bit of exposition. Exclusively, all that happens with Rukia is she just yells, Captain, after he spits out blood. And then Ukitake just yells, quiet, and then he talks a bit more about the Mimihage's power, and then you get, and then it cuts to like Aizen and Shunsui in the Mugen before, you know, the hand grabs the rock.
Okay, interesting.
And just like I believe, if I'm correct, this scene I'm looking at of like Ukitake's like dead corpse twitching, like sitting straight up with like a black gunk coming out of his mouth, is the last you see of him in the series, period.
I do remember something like that. Yeah.
So it is worth noting that he does kind of allude to, like, I'm sure he said something along the lines like, I'm sure you guys have probably heard of Mimihagi. He does allude to that in here as well. And then he also says that he was preparing the Keikoku or something like that, because Ukitake knew this was going to happen. He knew that this time was going to come. So Ukitake was preparing something called the Keikoku. And even Urahara is like, I have not heard of that before.
He straight up says, I've never heard of this technique.
And that is when we then roll into a lot of the stuff that's happening. Interesting.
Yeah, he does mention the Kamikake is apparently what it's called.
There it is. Kamikake. There it is. Yep, that's it.
So I found out how I survived. Nothing would please me more than to sacrifice this life I once lost for the court guards. Then he yells, and that's it. But that's it. That's Rip Ukitake.
Yeah, there's a lot of out of order. A lot. And no talking to the hand either for Yuha. None of that happens in the anime. The stuff that we get of, like, the gang jumping Yuha and Orihime trying to heal it is like literally maybe 30 seconds. It's super quick.
It was so quick.
Super, super quick. And then we go straight back. So like most of the episode is Ukitake, Aizen. Like that is most of the episode that you're going to get here.
I don't believe the gang jumps him at all. It's Yoruichi does her little net thing. And then she yells at Orihime to heal. And then that's it. It cuts to Ukitake.
No, Ichigo goes right back to beating Yuha's ass, like almost instantly. Yeah.
Okay, so I think part of the story being jumbled about is because Bleach was, you know, weekly serialized chapters, you had to remind people of what happened last week, so you would be cutting between like 8 different perspectives. With this, you can just, hey, just go watch the last episode.
Well, and also, like, you know, in the manga, like I was talking about the Urahara Lab stuff, so much of it is different. So much. Okay, and that's pretty much, by the way, that is the last of the lab content that we're going to get. I think we do see a little bit more as the Aizen information is happening.
Really? So you know who's haven't showed up yet.
Well, so here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. At some point, Byakuya is in the lab. He never gets an entrance. He just appears there. We never get any note of him showing up. Yumichika and Ikkaku are there as well. They don't get an entrance. They don't get a notation that they're there. They don't speak. They are just in a background shot. There is still no Kenpachi. This whole episode, Kenpachi does not show up to the lab. And a big part that they keep stressing, they bring up the gate again. And they're like, hey, like, are we going to make this gate thing now? Like, we got to make it to get up there. And Urahara said, like, we still don't have enough power to make it to the gate. Like, we don't have the Ryatsu to make it to the gate. And obviously, too, key players being missing, Kenpachi and Aizen, you know, and obviously Kiraku's not there as well. So that is the last that we see. But these characters, Byakuya shows up, Yumichika, Ikkaku, in the manga, they all get an entrance into the lab. Yeah, like, there's like a scene of them like, hey, what's up, guys? Like, we're fucking here. They're just in the background. They've just appeared. They're there now.
I am now looking at the lab scene. Literally, Byakuya shows up in a 2-page spread when Shinji and his grand gang make it in. And it's like, it's a Kisuke standing up on top of the thing, and Nao's on the right, Yushiro is off in the middle, and Byakuya is just silently standing to the left, and he says nothing in any of these scenes.
It's so weird. It's so weird. And even when I was watching this episode, I was like, oh, there's Byakuya. And then once again, he's gone. He doesn't say anything.
There he is. All right, Kisuke is talking about Squad 7 and how they refused the offer of a medical team. And then it says, Captain Kuski informed us that the captains of Squad 3 and 9 will be linking up with Squad 12. And then it cuts to Mayuri and Nemu healing the zombified captains in their weird pods.
Oh, because that's what they're installing right now.
Yes, I forgot to mention, they did show that last episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They showed that little scene, but I forgot to bring it up.
All right, are you ready for the Aizen scenes?
I'm so ready. My body could not be more ready.
All right. Kiraku enters the Mukin and calls out to Aizen. He's like, hey, like, I know you can hear me. Let's have a chat. And then he gets nothing. And he's like, are you not a fan of speaking over Ryatsu? No response still. And he's like, okay, well, I have these keys here. Like, I go ahead and I'll use, I've been given clearance to use the first three. He's like, I'm going to go ahead and use the first one for your mouth. And he's like, I'm sure for anybody after not having talked for 2 years, it's going to be impossible for you to speak. But knowing you, I'm sure you'll be fine. And then unlocks the mouth. And the moment he unlocks the mouth, Aizen appears in front of him, walking. Yup,
walks up to
him. And Kiraku's like, holy shit, like, that should be impossible. Like, what? And Aizen's like, what's up? he's like, you're correct. Like, how's it going? And then Aizen's like, well, don't you have the other three key or the other two keys to use? And Kiraku's just like, without doing anything, like, yeah, you're right. And just unlocks them both. He's just like, boom, boom.
Here's your left eye.
Yeah, and then here's your left ankle. And Kiraku is like shocked that he's fucking here still. He's like, this is just should be so impossible, but okay. And Aizen immediately notes, like, you know, like, interesting that you're here. And this is going to be a little bit out of order. So I did a little quick summary because it was so quick. It was so quick. And then the moment we were done, everybody was trying to tell us fuck out of the auditorium. So I had to take quick little notes. They have a little chat and Kiraku's like, hey, I have a feeling that our mutual interests are the same. Like, why didn't you come with me? And Aizen's like, well, what makes you think that I would be on your side? What makes you think that I would want to help your soul society and I wouldn't join the other side? And then Aizen kind of looks at Kiraku and sees, you know, the keys, and he notes that Aizen can tell that Kiraku has embedded the key to the Mukin within his within Kiraku's heart. So Kiraku has the key in his heart, and Kiraku's like, yeah, you saw right through me. He's like, that's one of the conditions of me even being allowed to come down here and get you, is that I had to embed the entrance to the Mukin in my heart so that if you killed me, the whole gate would close and no one would ever be able to escape. And that was by order of Central 46. And Aizen comments like, that's stupid ass Central 46. Like, they thought, went so far as to think that I would instantly kill you, that they set this whole thing up. He's like, it's good to see they've never changed. Like, they're such idiots. Kiraku, after that, he's like, hey, if you could do me a huge favor and sit in this chair. And that's when we get the reveal of the chair. Right? And all its gloriousness. And we see a bunch of, I'm going to assume that they're prison guards. We see a bunch of prison guards lining both sides. And right as he, like, reveals this chair, one prison guard just gets so impatient
and just
charges Aizen. And just runs right towards him. And that's when we get the reveal. Aizen's like, Like, did you think
that you dumb?
Yeah. Basically, we see the guy get decimated. He starts, like, evaporating. And Aizen's like, did you think that these rafts completely concealed, like, my Ryatsu, like, locked it in? He's like, no, they just made it so it stayed close to me. We see the blood of the guard start to fly towards Aizen, and it's being blocked by Aizen's Ryatsu. And it's like, oh, shit. And then we can see the purple outlining of Aizen, and we kind of see, like, the barrier of where his Ryatsu is. And Kiraka's like, come on, man. Like, wouldn't you want to smell the nice, fresh air of the Solar Society? And this is the last sentence that we get from Aizen. The last sentence of this, the whole episode. Aizen, we see the above ground of Soul Society of the Serite, and Aizen's like, oh, you think I want to smell the fresh air? He's like, the fresh air of the Soul Society that's about to be destroyed by Yuha, and then that's the end of the episode.
Yep, just cuts right there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is like a one-to-one. They didn't add anything, I guess, except for colors, because it's a black and white manga. Like, outside of, you know, there are interruptions in this, you know, it's cutting back and forth between Mayuri. Yeah, that's it. I don't think they changed anything.
Okay.
All right, then.
Good to know. It was a really cool experience. So when we watched this episode, first of all, fantastic episode. I think this is a great episode for not having a lot of action in it, which I feel like we got a good ebb and flow. First two episodes was so much action. The third episode went straight back to the lore, kind of dialed it back a little bit, brought it back into that character interactions. Loved it. Good dialogue, good lore. Loved the Ukitake scenes. Like, I talked about that scene.
It was so good.
The scene with Retsu and Ukitake was incredible. Fantastic. Like, what a great
addition.
Really
well done.
I love seeing Kiraku, Shunsui, spar in front of young Yama, young Retsu, and young Sasakibe, my boy. And
on top of that.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
They were both wielding swords on both hands.
They were dual wielding as they were sparring. That's correct. That is something as well. They were dual wielding while they were sparring. I told Jose right when that episode came out, I said, Jose, this is the start of the third episode. Embed this into your memory. Like, embed all of it. Like, because not only did we watch episode 1, 2, 3 back to back to back, there was no openings, no endings. So it didn't like stop almost at all. It just went to black. Next episode started. Went to black. Next episode started. But then also we had probably an hour and a half of Q&A that we had set through after that.
It went on because Marita definitely gave us a lot more.
And the whole time they were like, it was a super unique place we went to. It was super nice. But they said right at the start, like, hey guys, no photo, no video. And like, actually, please no phones, period. There was a lot of people that worked for Viz, a lot of people that worked for TV Tokyo, a lot of Japanese, I don't know the correct terms. I'm going to say this isn't his job title, but like Japanese ambassadors to the city of LA was one of them. Like important people that were here for this event to see this fireside chat that was happening as part of the Japan House. And they're like, please, guys, phones away. Like, do not have your phones out. We don't want any interactions. We don't want to see them. Like, there are certain people that are here with the press that they are allowed to have theirs out. But if you are not media, do not have your phone out. So I had to put my phone away, and it was away the whole time. So I had to sit through hour and a half of fireside chat. I was like, I need to remember everything that is happening in this episode. So the moment it got done, I just pulled out my notes app on my phone. I started going, just started typing away.
You should have seen it. We were trying to get pictures with like the poster and stuff, and immediately Sam's like, just nonstop, and his fiance, impatient little lady, but
yes,
just
true,
staring daggers at Sam, being like, let's go.
I was busy, dog. I was half debating that once the episode ends, I should go use the restroom. And so I could just sit there and just like, because the fireside chat, very interesting. I enjoyed it a lot. I love, of course, hearing about the stuff, but not as important as me making sure I get all the information from the episode. So I was like, I almost, like, if they would have given us a little bit of a stopping time, I would have dipped out. I would have ran to the bathroom really quick so I could type all that out. It was just so much information to remember because so much stuff happened. So many new scenes that weren't in the manga. It was crazy. It was really crazy, but I loved it. It was really good.
It was really, really good.
They said that the showing, they had about 100 seats that were available for the showing. It sold out almost instantly. They said it instantly sold out and all the tickets went away. And they had 260 people on the wait list for more tickets.
Damn.
How the hell did you two get tickets?
Well, Pythies, that's all me. So I saw it go live.
I saw Sam the Influencer.
One of the times that I was just hanging out on the Twitter and I saw them post about it for New York Comic Con. I was like, oh, like they're doing one in New York. And then I saw that they also listed they were doing one in LA. And then so I went to the LA place and I saw they were already had the tickets up. And then so I bought mine and my fiance's immediately. Then I texted Jose. I'm like, Jose.
I think
like,
you called me.
I called Jose.
Which was a triggering for me to get a phone call from this man at like, I think it was like 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I was late.
Yeah. And I was like, oh shit, Sam's calling. Like, what the fuck? I pick up and I was like, yo, what's up? And he's like, hey, they're doing this chat. You know, voice actors are going to be here. You want it? And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I was just yeah. Like, yeah.
So I immediately bought his too. I was like, yep, done. So I bought three tickets immediately. And then it really did. I remember checking right after. It sold out really quick. Really, really, really quick. Weirdly enough, though, not all the people showed up. There was a lot of empty seats on our side.
They came late. A lot of people who were right behind us were coming in late.
Okay. Which I guess is fine.
That just sounds like LA.
Yeah, you just missed the first two episodes. That's fine.
That's fine.
I am definitely in the background. There were probably four or five media people that sat in front of us. I think they were the Viz. I was in the background of all of their fucking videos. I'm going to be in all of them. Like, I was just like, every time they fucking did a video, I was right there in the background. I kept seeing myself in their camera.
Yeah, we were in the second row. We were not that far off. And we had pretty great view.
Yeah. We got in pretty early. So we can recap a little bit of the day. We first walked in. So I have never been to this place before. I have been to this mall that it was at. It's called, I don't even know what the mall is called. The Oviat or something. Not the Oviat. The Ovation. The Ovation. The mall. The mall is called the Ovation. I believe it used to be connected to a hotel, but it's not that same hotel anymore. It's called the Ovation Mall, and it has the Dolby Theater in it. It has the TCL Theater in it. It has a bunch of other stuff in it, restaurants, things like that. And I guess part of it is this Japan House. We've gone here four or five times. I've never seen this thing. And the Japan House is on the fifth floor, which is one of two things up there, right? It's the Dolby Theater has a spot up there, and the Japan House.
The ballroom is up there.
And that is it. And you're only allowed to go up there if you're going to one of these two things. So I've never been to the top of this mall like that before. So we went up there. Well, actually, we first went and they have an exhibit on the second floor. They had the Kawaii art exhibit happening, which was
very cool.
really cool. Also very weird. So check it out if you're there. It's a murder room. Interesting. Someone recognized me when we went there. So that was cool. Now, I thought, imagine my surprise. Now, shout out to this guy if you're watching. You were very nice. I thought he was a Bleach Boys listener/watcher. I thought that's where he knew us from. He knew me from my tweets.
Specifically the face.
Yeah. So we were walking around this art exhibit and he like was I could see him and he came up and he's like, oh, like I'm sorry, but like are you? And he's like, Weebs Guild? I'm like, yeah, that's me. I'm like, what's up? And I'm like, oh, do you watch? He's like, no, like I know you from Twitter. I recognize your face.
I held in my laugh so hard. Yeah. Just because he goes like, I recognize your face. And I was like,
yeah. So that was cool. He's a very nice guy. But then he told us where it was because we were looking through. I was going to ask somebody. And I was like, oh, like he said, are you? Well, he asked, like, are you here for the Bleach thing? I'm like, yeah. Like, that's why we're here. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's on the top, like on the very, very top. Like go up to floor five. And that's where it is. Like, oh, that's interesting. And he's like, yeah, I already went there and they told me that it was closed. And like you can't really go in and they're still setting up everything. So it'd be awkward if you were in there. So they said just to come back when it comes closer to one. Like, okay. So then we went up there right after that. And we were like, might as well check it out and just make sure so that way we at least know where it is. So we walked our way up there. We went to this place and we talked to the security guard. And she was like, yeah, they're not really letting people in right now because they're still setting up inside. But if you want to come back, close. She said closer to one, the security guard did. And then we kind of like, I was like, okay. And then I just kind of like was looking inside. She's like, oh, well, like you can go into the library if you want, which they have like this small little library room set up where it has a bunch of Japanese books and things. It's like, you can go in there. That's open. It's like, cool. So it's just me, Jose, and my fiance, the only three people in this library just looking around. That's where we took all the photos. They had these beautiful Bleach 20th anniversary artwork all over the place that were $1,800, $2,000,
$4,000,
$1,400. You want one that has Ichigo and Udyu? $4,000. Yep. It is insane. And then they have smaller ones, which are probably, they're a little bit bigger than 9x11s, I would say. A little bit bigger than like regular photo sizes. $360 a pop, but they're all extremely limited. The smaller ones were one of 100s. The big ones were one of 20s only. Yep. And you get certificate of authentication. You get the whole thing that comes with it. And they had them all on display. I was like, I told my friends, like, hey, How many funds do you think I can get if I like? There's one that Jose wanted, which I think is fucking ridiculous.
It was the funniest.
It was just like Cone's arm.
It was
just
his butt. It was his legs.
Yeah, it was just like different pieces of Cone's copy and pasted all over the thing. So it looked like it was a picture of fucking bananas.
I thought it was bananas at first.
And so then it's like, nope, that's Cone. Like, that's Cone that's there.
I walked up and goes like, that's Cone's butt. I kind of like this one.
And that was the cheapest of them, but $1,200.
Shit, dude.
If you want the really big one, $1,200. And then on the middle table, they had a bunch of displays of like Bleach manga box sets. They had the Bleach Blu-rays. They had the Bleach coloring books. They had the Bleach like data books that were in there.
They had the 20th anniversary cover.
Yeah, some of the stuff that we have on the set here, well, most of the stuff that we have on the set here, they had laying out on the table there. And then we were kind of walking around, and then a couple more people started to come in, and they were taking pictures and stuff. I took all the pictures already the moment I walked in, like ding, 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 ding. And then this guy comes out who I assume he works there, I'm pretty sure. He comes out, okay, are you guys here for the Bleach thing? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, get out. Like, you guys need to be out. Like, we're not open yet. Go out. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, my bad. And he's like, come back closer to 12:30. He's like, okay, cool. So then we went and we got lunch, but we already explored the whole thing. The whole thing. So, like, when they were bringing people in for the first time, when we were eventually allowed to go in, they like, oh, like, come into the library. It was like, oh, we already looked. So we were able to just, like, go right to the front and just, like, stand next to the doors. We already looked. We already took all the photos. We already saw everything we need to see. So, boom, done.
Once again, I don't know how you did it at Anime Expo and in here. That is just the most Sam shit I've ever heard.
My fiance said the same thing. Yeah. She was like, once a fucking again, we get kicked out of somewhere because you just go in when you're not supposed to. And she's like, you could tell that you weren't really supposed to be in there. I was like, the security guard said we could go in. So I wasn't going to double check her. I was going to be like, oh, are you sure? I was like, no, she gave me the green light. I'm going to go right in.
Next time we wear suits and nice clothes.
Yeah. Hey, I told my fiance, because they asked, like, oh, are you here for the Bleach thing? Like, what if I was like, nah. It's like, I'm just hanging out. Like, don't mind me. Because they were even like, oh, they have a balcony up there that overlooks the Hollywood Boulevard. I'm like, oh, you can go hang on the balcony too if you want. I was like, cool. So we were like out there on the balcony hanging out. And then eventually they were like, yeah, you guys aren't supposed to be here. Like get out. And I was like, okay, that's fine.
Hey, Sam, for the next Bleach event, I need you to come in wearing a Bleach shirt and a Bleach coat and Bleach shoes carrying the manga. And then when they ask you, are you here for the Bleach thing? You say, what's Bleach?
It's like, never heard of him in my life. I don't know what you're talking about. No, thank you.
And Jose comes in and he is carrying a jug of Bleach, the cleaner. He's like, I thought this was a Bleach thing, not whatever that is.
I'm here for the custodian convention. They said they would be unveiling the new Bleach.
But both of you just come in with bottles of Bleach. And if the episode's bad, you start sprinkling it on the actors.
Okay.
All right, then get the felony.
Yeah. Let's see. What else did we do? So let's talk Q&A.
Oh, I thought you were going to say we got ripped off at Johnny Rockets.
Okay. Yeah, I'll throw a special fucking shout out to Johnny Rockets. These fucking dickheads, okay? Now, Pythia, I'm going to tell you what we bought, and I want you to tell me what you think the price of it is. It's going to be a fun little game show here.
Okay, I need you to ask for what is a Johnny Rockets.
Okay, Johnny Rockets is a 50s-style diner.
50s-style American traditional diner that has, like, jukeboxes and stuff on your table.
It's a diner, though. Yeah. It's a diner. Okay. And so Jose got a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
I got a grilled cheese. My fiance got chicken strips. And then we got two sides of fries, onion rings, and three soft drinks. So basically three complete meals. What do you think the final cost of that was?
I can't stop laughing because, of course, you would get a fucking grilled cheese, you child.
That's not the laughing point. That's not the laughing point.
Oh, of course, your fiance. Of course, Katie would get chicken strips.
All right. That's all right. Carry on.
Jose gets the adult meal. Thank you for bringing some class to the group, Jose.
I will gotta admit, it was like a bacon cheeseburger that had like a really good ranch sauce in there and on what was it onion rings.
Oh, that sounds okay. So good. And now you want me to guess how much it should be all together?
Yes. Yeah,
so it was a burger, grilled cheese, chicken tenders, and you said fries and onion rings.
Yes. Yep. Correct.
If that was here, that would be about $30.
Okay. Now equate that to what you think that would be California prices, Pythies.
Well, California, remember, I live in fucking poor-ass East Coast, so I guess just take everything and double it and say, I guess, California, they charge you $60.
All right, here you go. So the price, pre-tip, by the way, pre-tip, so I tipped on top of this, $86
What the fuck?
For all of that. Like, that is insane. We got scammed out the fucking window.
I could buy Sparking Zero for that.
I know.
The reason that why I was upset was we've gone to the other Johnny Rockets, which is in a different mall in Orange County where we live.
Mm-hmm.
They have a combo meal. So $15 gets us the fries, the drink, and the entree.
So the scam, Pythies, was that everything was an individually priced item is how they got us. There were no combos, no nothing.
And I remember asking the guy, I'm like, oh, does it come with fries? He's like, no, those are separate. And I was like, okay.
So after I got done tipping, which I like to make it a nice round number, it was $100 on the dot.
What the fuck?
For three people, it was $100 on the dot. Regardless, fuck Johnny Rockets.
Yeah.
Them damn scamming ass mofos. Not be going
to
that
spot. We should have gone to the pizza spot you spotted on the balcony.
There was a New York Slice place right across the strip or the Hollywood Boulevard. I was like, dude, I saw it from the balcony. I was like, Jose, I've always wanted to try that pizza place.
And I'm like, what, that one?
Yeah.
It was next to all these shady little areas. We went to
dumbass Johnny Rockets. By the way, my fiance is the one that wanted Johnny Rockets.
Oh, she did. She was the one that wanted.
Which is why we went to damn Johnny Rockets. And it sucked ass. So don't go to the one that is in the Ovation Mall. Horrible. Hate
unless you have money.
Yeah, unless you're rich, man. Hey, do it up. Do what you want to do. I can't even imagine if we got shakes or something. My fiance, my lovely, lovely fiance, was having a embarrassment panic attack while we were in Johnny Rockets as well.
Oh, no.
This is
like conversation for our Patreon only right now, because it's hilarious. Just a slice of life stuff.
Yeah, I thought the event was cool. Some of the Q&A stuff that I can remember. So we saw Marita and we saw Sugiyama. They did Q&A. A lot of the stuff was similar answers that I have already heard at like Anime Expo and things like that. One of the things that they did that they said was the first time ever, which is true because before, so they did a thing called live dubbing. They have done a thing before Animax, which I thought this is what they were talking about. They've done a thing at Animax before where they read the lines, like it shows like a static image and they read the lines so that way they can just like give you a taste of what the character is. This they did is called live dubbing, where they show the scene. The scene is actually playing and they are actually saying the lines live. So it's a little bit different. It's the full scene playing at the same time that they're saying it. So we got to see them both do that, which was pretty cool. One of the things I thought was very interesting about it is we got to see Marita and he was like doing the grunts and stuff while Ichigo was doing his attacks. And I was like, cool.
That's so interesting.
Very, very, very cool. Like the stuff with him talking, I mean, Marita sounds just like Ichigo, like normally. Sugiyama, which by the way, very cool because he was also the voice actor for Sasuke. So very, very cool that he was there. It was also interesting. The personalities of Marita and Sugiyama are almost identical to like their characters,
which is really crazy, right?
Where Sugiyama is very calm and he gives very like long, in-depth answers to what the question is, where Marita is very energetic, very passionate, and he will like go off. Like he'll also give a long answer, but he'll start on the path and then go and just go all the way around like to something else, totally something random.
Eventually, he comes full circle.
Yes. So it was super cool to see the both of them. One of the things that I thought was very interesting from the both of them is, first of all, Marita told a story. One of the things that was like, what would you like to say to American fans of Bleach? And both of them said that they find it very cool. They said that Bleach has always been very popular in Japan. It's always been that way. And they said now it's cool to see that Bleach being so popular all over the world, especially Americas, is one of the things that is super cool for them to see that how popular it is. And they said they love that they have been doing this for 20 years. It's been 20 years of Bleach that they've been doing this. And that they, when they were first doing it, they met people that were watching the show. And now they have been able to meet multiple generations of fans that have come and talked about this show. And Marita gave this awesome story of actually when he was at Anime Expo and he was doing autograph signings. And he said that someone came up, it was like this big guy. This big guy came up and was telling Marita like how much, like he said that he shook Marita's hand and started crying. And then he said how much the show means to him. And like the show taught him from Ichigo's perspective of what it means to protect somebody. And like because of that, like when he was a kid, like he wanted to protect people. And because that meant so much to him, he became a firefighter. And Marita said that is like just something that like
that is so heartwarming.
Really touched him. And he said that since like he said not since then, but he said he's also heard the same like similar stories of people becoming nurses, teachers because of stuff like that. And he said that he truly believes one of the best parts of Bleach is one, all of the characters that are there, and two, that everybody can find a character to relate to in Bleach. Like there's a little bit of Uryu, there's a little bit of Rukia, there's a little bit of Ichigo in everybody. And that's something that he said has been one of the best parts. He says anytime he hears those stories, that is his favorite part of voice acting.
That is just linking together Ichigo's job.
Yep.
Do you remember when the club outside, someone asked, what does Ichigo do? And Kubo said, "Well, oh, he's a translator. He translates." And they goes, "Well, what does he translate?" He goes, "Oh, he goes, he translates from English to Japanese because he likes to build the bridge between two worlds." Now he's talking to some crazy American who's like, "Oh yeah, I listened to you growing up, and now I'm a firefighter."
Yep. He said that really, really touched him. He loved it. Sugiyama, meanwhile, gave a lot of different takes on like First of all, Marita had nothing but nice things to say about Johnny.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that they talked about is like one of the questions I was asked, what do you think about the English dubbing of Bleach, Thousand Year Blood War? And Marita said that he's actually met Johnny multiple times. And he said that the first time that he met Johnny, he saw him and he was like, wow, he looks like a very cool like guy. He seems very, very cool. And he said immediately Johnny came up to him and was like, hey, and just like super nice, nicest guy you've ever met. And he was talking to Johnny about the first time that he was beginning to dub Ichigo. And he said that, you know, like in Japan, when they do dubbing of American shows or whatever, a lot of the times the philosophy behind it is that they need to dub the show as accurate as possible to the original actor. Like that is the goal of the dubbing. And when he was talking to Johnny, Johnny was like, yeah, so I was thinking I'm going to go more kind of a street with Ichigo, you know, and Marina first, he was like, that doesn't seem like that's right. You know, that doesn't seem like that's the way that it should be done. But the more that he thought about it and the more that he saw the American actors dubbing the show, he really felt inspired by the fact that they are given the leeway to kind of give their own take on the character and really take in this character and see what it means and how they would want to adapt it to their style. And so now looking back, he says he didn't expect like such a nice guy like Johnny to have such like a impact on him and give such an like a inspirational quote to him. And now when he does do dubbing work, he says he does take that to heart and tries to do it like Johnny,
which was super nice to hear. Mm-hmm. I also liked his answer when they asked what changed from Ichigo then to Ichigo now. And it's a lot of it is the enunciation of things and how Ichigo would sound using not his, for lack of a better word, like his throat to speak, but more of coming from the inside of him, enunciating the vowels.
Yeah, he said his octaves were higher when he first started. Mm-hmm. Now they actually come from a lower point when he does it now. And he said that he feels like that is just a little bit of the change with Ichigo that has happened. Of course, also a little bit of the change with how much older Marita is now. So he said that that's one of the things that's really cool.
But still, powerful voice. Yeah. Even
dude, it scared me at first. Like he was giving this speech like a normal talk. It's like this. It's like, yeah, so I really think that the octaves have changed when I do Ichigo. And then he stands up and goes, Bankai! I'm like, oh my god, I about gave me a goddamn heart attack.
Scared the moderator.
Yeah.
She was like standing and she was just watching, and then all of a sudden she's like,
yeah, he just went like from regular talking to screaming. I was like, oh, all right, like cool, which was very awesome. He did Bankai twice and he showed us the different pronunciations and how he emphasizes on certain parts of the word, which was super cool. Loved it. Sugiyama, I thought was interesting. They asked him the question about the English dubbing. He's like, yeah, I haven't watched it.
He's like, I've never seen it.
But I forget what he said for that answer. But he said that he's never watched it, but he does know. Oh, I remember. He said that in Japan, there is a little bit of a problem because with American speech, you know how they feel about something the moment they open their mouth. Like the moment they open their mouth, like you know whether they hate it, they love it, what it is. And he said a lot of times for the Japanese language, you don't know how they feel about something until the very end of the sentence.
Yeah, he says it'll start very ambiguous and then you won't find out whether the character likes it or dislikes it up until the last couple of syllables.
So he said a lot of times they have a problem when they're dubbing things like movies, because if it's an American movie, you will know their feeling on it the moment you see their face.
Yeah.
And so like it's hard to adapt that into Japanese language because it's very ambiguous until it's not. And then you find out at the very end. So a lot of times they have to move stuff around to shoehorn that meaning right at the start so they can match the original content, which I thought was also very interesting.
It is quite interesting. I think it has to do with like the Japanese sentence structure being backwards compared to ours.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they put a lot of important stuff at the end so they can start with sort of a, they gently move you into it, where I would start a sentence with, you motherfucker, you broke my bike. They'd be like, my bike, it seems to have been broken, you motherfucker.
Yep, that's exactly how it's structured.
Another question they were asked is, what is their favorite memory of dubbing Bleach, or like not dubbing but doing the voices for Bleach? And Marita gave this long story about how the Japanese voice actor for Yodoichi likes to constantly fuck with his script, and like it has been happening since the very first time that they have recorded. And like he gave a specific example. Like he can leave to, like, he'll go leave to go use the restroom and he'll come back and his script will have doodles all over it. And it's all from the Yodoichi voice actor. And so he said in one particular instance, he was doing a line and he came back into the very end of the line and she drew a heart. So like he just picked up the script and started reading it. And the way that he read the line, instead of going like, I hate you, Yuhaba, I was like, I hate you, Yuhaba. He's like, it's like, I really read it with a connotation. I'm supposed to be like, this nice friendly
thing. She drew a heart on it, which is what triggered him to be
and
it's like,
and she came and drew it on. It's like it's like she does that all the time. And Sugiyama had to like chime in. It's like, but they're friends though. They're friends. Like, yeah, like he like chime in, like it's friendly, you know.
That is the most Yoruichi would do that for real though.
Yep. I was like, damn.
Embodying the character. About right.
So he said that she has been doing that for the whole time that they have been doing lines together. And then they're like, oh, like that sounds like so nice. And then Morito's like, yeah, well, it really sounds like the Yoruichi voice actor hasn't grown up.
Yeah.
I was like, all right.
Yeah. Our moderator, her faces were hilarious. Yeah. And same with the translator. They were just like,
yeah, they were good. They were really good. So it was a really cool event. And it was something that even talked about the owner of Japan House, the CEO of Japan House, whoever runs Japan. Let's go with whoever runs Japan House. There was the lady that was there running the whole thing. It was like her thing. She talked about how much she wants to do more events like this in the future and how nice it was to be able to do this event because she worked with Viz Media and it was such a big thing for the Maddie's voice actors to come by. And so she really hopes that everybody really enjoyed the event and they really hope that everybody had such a good time. And it was such a unique, like small little, I don't know, probably about the size of the garage that we're in right now is the way that we were sitting, maybe a little bit bigger, but it fit about 100 people in here and they just projected it on the wall. And that was the event. And it was very sincere. It was very close. I don't know
very
the word
intimate.
I'm looking for. Intimate. Thank you. It was a very intimate experience. Like a lot of times when they're talking, like they're looking at you because you're like right there. And I'm like, oh, all right. Like, this is interesting. Sure. So I had a good time at it. I had a great time. The chairs were uncomfortable as hell because we were in there for like the event was only supposed to be 50 minutes of Q&A and they probably went for almost an hour and a half. Yeah. They went a long time because Morita was telling crazy stories, like really
hilarious
crazy
stories.
Stuff.
I was having a good time.
He's such a character. So cool. But it was really cool. Thank you, Japan House. Loved it. I had a great time going to it. Hopefully they do another one. That'd be really cool.
I'd love to go.
I don't have much else to say. Now, I do have one thing that I'm saving exclusively for the Patreon. There was a question that was asked, and it specifically relates to Kubo and how involved he was with the anime and some things that got learned from Kubo to the anime. That is going to be in our exclusive Bleach Boys only content on Patreon. So if you guys are interested in hearing that, make sure you guys join our Patreon, patreon.com/weebsguild. We have a 15-minute block every single episode, the Bleach Boys Captain's Meeting, where you get to hear all the behind the scenes of everything and a little extra tidbit every single week. So if you guys enjoyed it, if you guys have any questions about episode 29, feel free to let us know. We'll all be in the comments. We can answer whatever you guys need, except for Pythies, of course. Hate to see it. We will still be back next week with another podcast, maybe talking about the premiere and some rumors and stuff like that going on. Maybe a little bit of a shorter one. So make sure you guys are subscribed. Make sure you guys follow us on Instagram and Twitter. And then, of course, join the Discord. All of that is in the descriptions down below. As always, thank you to our Patreon supporters, specifically PV, our Weebs Guild Captain member. We appreciate the support as always. And we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye, everybody.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.